What of you? Wow. What of you? Have you ever said those words? I wonder if Moses said them when he climbed Mount Pisgah and looked out at the promised land that was there before him. Many of us have taken in beautiful images in our life, scenery from on high. I can remember flying many years ago, and the pilot told us, come over the thing, and he said, look out your window at the beauty of Greenland. And it was amazing to look down and see it. I've stood on the Mount of Olives, and I've looked out over the city of Jerusalem. I've had the privilege and pleasure of taking a boat ride across the Jordan River. I've been able to take a train from Waterloo Station in England to Stratford-upon-Avon and take a boat ride on the Thames River. I was able to do these things, and all those places are such awe and such beauty. But I tell you, some of the greatest places that I've ever been, I've stood on the beaches of eastern North Carolina, and I've looked at the beauty of the ocean. I have walked out and looked over the deck or those viewing places in the mountains and seen the sun rising over the mountains. See it setting in the evening. Those are things that make us say, wow, what a view. What an awesomeness. But sometimes of a morning you can look out and you can see things too that are the beauty all around you. And it might be in small things. Have you ever seen a crocus come up with snow on the ground and pop out the beauty of coming out, the new life? It's so beauty. The beauty of the things around us that we take for granted, the things that we see. Now, I'm not impressed when 955,000 acorns fall upon my house daily, and they beat you when the wind blows. If you walk out, I think there are squirrels up that are targeting you and get like the ones in the paper. But sometimes I look at that and I think, what beauty. Even though they're annoying, and even though I have to sweep them up, and even though I have to rake them up in piles from time to time, or they still are interesting because they provide something for those squirrels to live on, and they provide things for us, and of course they provide an opportunity to grow more trees, and if we were to leave them all alone, we would have lots of trees around us. But we need to think about the beauty of what we have around us. But still, I wonder today if Moses was filled with awe by what he saw. Did Moses see the green and fertile land, the float beyond the river of Jordan that was all around it? Did he see the Dead Sea and the hills that surround it? Did he see the towns and the villages of the people the children of Israel were about to displace? Did he see the things there? Were the roads and pathways connecting one village to another? Did he see all that? Did he see the smoke from distant fires as people lived in those places? Besides wondering what Moses saw when he climbed that mountain, I wonder what he was feeling. What was he thinking? The scriptures do not let us in on Moses' feelings or emotions. I wonder, though, if Moses felt sad and disappointed when he climbed Mount Pisgah and he looked out over the promised land. He had been through so much with these people, wandering around in the wilderness for 40 years, listening to their complaining and bickering, defending them before God. Moses had seen the mighty hand of God work miracles in their midst. He had experienced God's anger when they were disobedient and went astray. Now, having come all this way, Moses would not be allowed to enter the promised land, only view it from high atop Mount Pisgah. Seems a little unfair, doesn't it? We say that, boy, that's not fair, that's unfair. How many of you were ever told life was fair? Moses hadn't asked for this job, oh boy, and actually did all in his power to say no to God, to go to Egypt and bring God's people out. He said, are you kidding me? I don't want to do this. I can't talk, Lord. I stutter, I stumble, I fall. I can't do it. He gave him Aaron to put in there. See, he can speak for you. But you're the one I need, Moses. Moses ran. He took off, but guess what? God was right there. Yet we see God's tender mercies in the fact that God was on the mountain with Moses when he viewed the promised land and when he died in Moab. We hear those words. He says, there he was. God allowed him to see, and God was with him, and God was there when he died. God allowed the people to mourn for the 30 days, and then God said, mourning is over, and it's time to move on. He allowed Moses to live for 120 years, to have his sight unimpaired and his vigor not abated. That was a miracle. You see, Moses' life had been amazingly led by the hand of God all of his life. His mother making sure that his big sister Miriam put him in the river to save him. You see, he was that baby that was going to be killed when the king made that edict, that issue. Hey, get rid of all of them, all the male kids, kill them. His sister Miriam took him down and put him in a basket and put him in the bulrushes in the edge of the river. God was there when that Egyptian princess found him and raised him in the palace with his own birth mother as his nanny, so to speak. His own mother was his nursemaid, living a good life, but becoming aware of his heritage and trying to deal with it. Moses had a lot on his plate. He was trying to figure out who he was, where he came from. Was he a Hebrew or was he an Egyptian? And when he found out he was a Hebrew raised in the Egyptian palace, he had an identity crisis, as people would say. He had to go find himself. He got in trouble. But you see, Moses was called by God from a burning bush, seeing the face of God. Moses was picked by God to lead his people, and he was an unwilling servant for many years. He ran away, and yet God still pursued him, and at his old age, he wasn't a young man when he done this, in his old age, he led the people out of Egypt and into the wilderness and on to the promised land. The Lord allowed him to work and do it through. He said, I'm not letting go of you, Moses. I'm not letting you alone. You're the one I want. You're the one I need for this job, and one day you're going to figure it out. And he finally did. He made mistakes. He got angry. He got upset. He got frustrated with these people who didn't believe and wouldn't want to be a part of it. Oh, many trials and tribulations along the way over those 40 years come and went. Yet Moses still obeyed God, and the Israelites still complained. Do you ever feel like all you hear is people complaining about things? Nothing's ever right. I mean, they can have everything in the world and something's always wrong. You see, Moses' death was not as entertaining as his life, but God was there, and it made all the difference in the world. God was with Moses from the beginning to the end. He was there when those people were complaining. He was there whenever things were going good. He was there when the manna fell from the sky. He was there when he struck the rock for the water to come out. He was there with him all the time, and Moses followed him, and Moses listened. See, God buried Moses in a place unknown to man so that his burial place would not be desecrated. He allowed his body afterwards to find peace. I wonder if Moses was angry as he looked out over the beauty of the land that he saw before him. We know that there was definitely an angry streak in his personality, because as a young man, he had, after all, committed murder. Think about that. The man that God chose from a baby, from the time before he was born, he saved him, and he saved him, and he saved him. That's the man God chose. That's the one he chose to do this. He was a murderer. He got angry as a young man, and he killed someone. God chooses all kinds of people to do his work. He chooses all kinds of us each and every day. Everybody sitting out there, he's called us according to his purpose. He's called us to be a part of his kingdom. You see, perhaps as Moses looked out over that land, he was angry with the children of Israel for their lack of faith and disobedience. When the spies returned from visiting the promised land, why didn't they listen to the good report of Caleb and Joshua? Why didn't they? These two men encouraged the people to have faith in the power of God to conquer the people of the land. But the people listened to the report of what? Not Caleb and Joshua, but for those 10 spies that went ahead, who feared they could not penetrate that well-fortified cities or defeat the giants that they saw. We find that in Numbers 13:33, where people were scared. They were frightened. They were afraid. They didn't believe what God had put before them with Moses, with Caleb and Joshua, because that's who Moses had sent out to see. But yet the 10 spies that came back, that's what the people wanted to believe. They wanted to believe not what God was doing, but what somebody else was doing. So many times we see that today in the world we live in. We don't want to believe the people of God. We want to believe everything else. You see, the children of Israel rebelled against God and were punished. They were made to roam in the wilderness for 40 years. 40 years. 1 year for each day that the spies spent in the promised land. Think about that. The time that the spies were gone, every day became 1 year. If only they had been faithful, they could have been enjoying the fruits of the land by now. Oh, well, before they got there. Perhaps Moses was also angry with God for not allowing him to enter that land. Hadn't he done all that God had asked him? Hadn't he been patient and loving to these people who wanted to replace him at every moment, who questioned his authority and his every move? Everything he did, they began, Moses, that's not right. Moses, I don't like this. You're leaving us out here to starve to death. You're doing this, you're doing that. Moses, Moses, Moses. You know, what's wrong with you? Then again, maybe Moses felt a sense of relief. It had been a long 40 years, people wandering around in that desert. The children of Israel were a difficult bunch of people. The Bible tells us that they were stubborn and stiff-necked. Perhaps Moses was not looking forward to a prolonged fight to conquer the people of the Promised Land. Anybody ever told you you were stubborn? Yep, they have. Anybody ever told you you were hard-headed? Yep, been there. Well, that's kind of like things your own way. That's exactly what these people were. They were stubborn and stiff-necked. They were hard-headed. How could they complain when they lost the battle or when they weren't going their way? They always complained. Maybe Moses was happy to have the younger Joshua lead the group of Israelites into the battle. But as I thought about Moses and the Promised Land, I recognized that we all have our own Promised Land that we are trying to enter. We all have goals and dreams that we pursue. Perhaps our goals are academic, to attain a certain degree or achieve academic status. Maybe our goals are to have a great marriage and a wonderful family. Perhaps our goal is to be healthy or to get in the shape or attain the perfect weight. Maybe our dream is that perfect job or that perfect house. You see, like Moses, we might find ourselves seeing these dreams and goals from afar, but we might not be able to attain them. You see, there are times when we have to give up our dreams and our goals. Maybe we have to lower them a little bit. Maybe we have to rethink them. There are times when we have to review our own life, take a look at who we are and what we are doing. We have to stop. We have to examine who we are and what we're doing. We have to reassess our goals and ask God to help us. In other words, we need to let God in on our plans. Have you ever thought about that? You know, we make plans, but have you asked God about it? Have you prayed about it? Have you talked about it? We need to pray about where we are headed as individuals and also where we are headed as the church. We need to ask ourselves some questions. How does this make us feel? Do we become sad and disappointed? Do we get angry with God? Do we get angry with ourselves? Do we get angry with other people? Are we relieved that we don't have to carry that burden or achievement anymore? Wherever you may be and whatever you may be facing, know this: God is with you. Just as God was always with Moses, God is with us. Let us pray. Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for giving us the views in life. Thank you for allowing us to achieve so many things. But thank you also, Lord, for allowing us sometimes just to see something before we have to experience. and to know, Lord, what it is we need to do. Sometimes to wake up before it's too late. Sometimes to take a look around us before it's too late. Sometimes to think about what we're saying and what we're doing, how it sounds to other people, how it sounds to you. But most importantly, to let us hear it for ourselves, and what does it sound like to us. So, Lord, this day, allow your words to be with us not only this day, but in the weeks ahead to remind us, Lord, that we all have a view. And what we do with it is up to us and you. So be with us now. Continue to bless our time, for it's in your name I pray. Amen. Our hymn of decision is Precious Name 536. Precious Name, oh how sweet. Would you stand as we sing?